Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Project Empowerment with Kathleen, a show dedicated to empowering lives everywhere by bringing you people, stories, ideas, and inspiration to help each of us make our world a better place. And if you wish to participate during today's show, you can log into the chat room at projectempowerment.info, and I'd love to answer your questions and have our guest answer your questions. And to introduce her, I'm actually waiting for her to come on the line here in just a moment, is author and relationship coach, Dr. Susan Campbell. And we're going to be discussing her newest book, which she co-authored with Dr. John Gray, 5-Minute Relationship Repair. It's quickly heal upsets, deepen intimacy, and use differences to strengthen the love. Now, here's a little preview about this. So falling in love is the easy part. Staying in love is another matter. Some couples seem blessed with everlasting love, and then there's everyone else. So there's bye-bye blissful honeymoon, hello, button-pushing fights, and cold smoldering silent resentment. So how do we work with this? So what do couples do, and what is missing, and how do couples that have been together for a long time stay together? So according to Drs. Campbell and Gray, they know how to repair, and that's what we're going to be discussing today in her wonderful book. And I think I've got her on the line here, so just a second here. Hi, is this Dr. Campbell?
Yes, hi, Kathleen.
Hello, thank you so much for joining me. I just gave you a quick little brief intro about your book. And excellent. So first off, before we go any further, I'll do a little bit more work as far as introducing your work. You are a coach, and you teach therapists as well, and you work with couples privately. Can you share a little bit about that information before we dive into the meat and potatoes of your new book?
Yes. So when you say that information, you mean share a little bit about the book?
Yes, the book, and also about your work outside of the book itself.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, I used to teach couples therapy and family therapy at University of Massachusetts back in the 70s.
Okay.
And I've been a couples counselor for 45 years, so I have finally boiled down what can resolve all the misunderstandings between people, basically boiled it down to people getting their buttons pushed, getting the old fears based on old childhood unmet needs.
Yeah.
Those things coming up and wreaking havoc in your adult relationships, and it really is a matter of healing your past in your adult relationships if you want to get along.
Yes, you know, and we can't get away
if we're going to be in a relationship. We can't get away without having some old unmet needs come up to bite us in the rear end, you know, and say, hey, pay attention to me, because if you pay attention to me, you can heal these wounds and really be a secure functioning couple and a secure individual.
Right, and that's the beauty of what you and Dr. John Gray put together is you use an example of a couple through the whole thing, using their example of the stuff that would come up, the unresolved issues, et cetera, the triggers. And what I personally appreciate is, thank you, first of all, for writing this book, because I think this is going to be this is an incredibly powerful tool, and that's what you guys have designed it to be. Plus, you have online resources, if I remember correctly, through your website. I think SusanCampbell.com, but you also have a specific website.
We have 5MinuteRelationshipRepair.com, where people can go right away and download the free workbook that has reprints of all the worksheets in the book, but people don't want to just write in their books. Plus, they need to use these worksheets, especially the repair statement, over and over many times.
Right. Oh, well, you know, it's so powerful. So I'm going to share something with you. You know, about 20-plus years ago, I lived in a shelter for battered women. I had to flee for my life, and I was in a domestic violence situation. And since then, I've really been, you know, working on myself personally to repair old wounds, the past, you know, stuff from the past. And then just, you know, this next month marks the 1-year anniversary of my second divorce. So a lot of stuff has come up over the last 5 years, you know, 4 years since my ex-husband and I broke up. And so it's been for me personally, I am grateful for this, because there are so many things that have that were in my past, and in, you know, from triggers from childhood to the first abusive marriage, that things got stirred up in the second marriage, that I didn't know how to cope with those things or how to work with them, and your tools in here are actually extremely valuable. So my day job is at a pediatric hospital, and I've already written for our monthly newsletter a link for your book because I think people
thank
need
you so much. Thank you.
Oh, you're most.
We really want these tools to be used. Yeah.
So let's dig in a little bit here. So you use this couple, which it was really nice to read actual. These are real people, right? Or was this fictitious?
This is kind of a composite of. Some of our typical clients, so it's not real.
Oh,
people.
I love it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but it is so real, though. I mean, like, you start off with how these alarms go off. So before we get further, your book is kind of broken down to three main sections. There's three keys to everlasting love, where we have to learn how to pause, calm, and repair. And you do.
Right.
You break it down in those simple formats, but it's so important to really understand what each segment represents. So I want to spend a little bit of time on each of those, if that's all right.
Sounds good.
So the biggest thing, too, is like you even have people, part of their exercises is really figuring out what are their triggers, because that's going to go dive into what the fears are. What, you know, for example, the story you start out, one of the stories in the book was Donna was cooking dinner and her husband came home late and she was upset because she felt that all he thinks about is work and all of this stuff. And all of this, these thoughts are going on in her head, and then he's shutting down and he goes off into the den. And it was like how they were both had these stories going in their heads that was triggers from their past of unresolved fear of abandonment and fear of all of these things. And
her fear was like the fear I don't matter, because, you know, you come home late and don't even think about calling me. And his fear is, gee, you criticize me right as soon as I come in the door. His fear is I'm not accepted by you. So there's different fears for different personality types. And it's really important. In the book, we show couples how to figure out what's the type of fear that you tend to manifest and what's your partner's deeper fear, so you can reassure their fears and get back to feeling close during the repair part.
Right. And it really, you know, and once we get towards the end of the show, you know, we'll discuss a little bit more about the simplicity of some of the dialogue that you can use. But it's so vital to really be aware of these things, because, you know, when I was reading that section, I thought about with my second ex-husband, I remembered a similar situation. I had prepared this wonderful meal, and he wasn't home. And I'm like, it's our anniversary. Why isn't he home? I was so angry with him. And it turned out I had the date wrong. And I was like, but I got my side. I was so embarrassed.
A lot better than the other.
I know, right? But I was really embarrassed because embarrassed, but I was angry because I felt like what he was doing was so much more important than what I was doing for him. And it was very one-sided. And I'm reading through your book and thinking, oh, gosh, this happened, that happened. I've dealt with that. Oh, boy, I've been right there.
Oh, good. I'm glad the examples speak to you.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure it's gonna definitely speak to my listeners. So, you know, the thing, too, let's see, I wanted to dig up something here real quick that I thought was really – really powerful, that we're still talking about the pause. So this is such the first thing is pause, and it's really like this is like the timeout. This is the part where you're like, okay, I'm recognizing what's going on. I'm recognizing the triggers, and like we had already discussed, it's really important to understand what the triggers are. Some of the triggers could be, well, let's give some examples if you want to. What would be a typical
like
list
fear
of
rejection, and that would be like if the person maybe just isn't giving you an answer that sounds like they've been listening. You know, this is common things. It's not like horrible arguments that push these trigger buttons. It's like, you know, maybe your partner gives you kind of an off-the-wall response to something you've just shared, and you expected a different response, and so you feel rejected. or he didn't come home when he said he was going to, or at least when you thought he was going to for your anniversary dinner. So you feel abandoned. It's like, I feel like I don't matter. I'm all alone. Those kind of stories. Those are the reactive stories. But the fears are things like, well, feeling abandoned, ignored, not important, overwhelmed, criticized, judged, not accepted. Those are the kind of core fears that people tend to harbor deep in their subconscious. But if they can become conscious of these and talk about them, and we give people language to talk about them, that makes a big difference. So the part is arming yourself first with some awareness of what are the early warning signs of being triggered, like your stories, like I'm not important or his work is more important than me. When you hear your mind making up stories, that's one of the early warning signs, you know. And there's early warning signs in the body, in the emotions, and in the mind with the little self-fulfilling negative stories, you know, worst-case scenario stories.
Right.
So once you hear your mind doing that, that's when you're supposed to pause.
Yeah.
And stop digging the hole deeper.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, you know, something that I found that was really helpful, too, is really you give language and you teach language on how to address these issues. Because there's people that are afraid of discussing what they're really feeling because of either creating further damage or maybe... Yeah, or they're afraid of digging too deep. I'm not really sure because, I mean, I remember looking back, I didn't know how to express how I felt, so I kept it in. And then it came out in other ways, so, which probably was obviously not healthy.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. People think that they can stuff their feelings and get over it by themselves, but it usually will come out in some other indirect way. Or maybe after about five more similar incidents happen, then it'll all come tumbling out like, you know, big barrage of criticism and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So after, you know, give us some examples. So we pause, we take a deep breath. There's some verbiage that you use in the back. Actually, before I go there, I wanted to... This is what I was looking for. I apologize. I'm kind of jumping around here because I've got your book all bookmarked and highlighted.
Oh, great.
And I skipped past where I wanted to go. So there's a section which I really enjoyed. It was on page 106, and it was taking inventory of your control patterns.
I
thought was really powerful because it's really about owning your stuff, as it were, and really getting to know who you are, because what you're bringing to the relationship is obviously going to bring, you know, come out. So this is about learning, you know, what are your buttons, basically. And you give such, like, there's like 2-3 pages of lists of these things, and I'll just give you a few examples here. What the first one was replying too quickly rather than taking in what is being said. How often do we listen to just reply and not really listen and take in what that person's saying? Because if someone's expressing their feelings, they're giving you, I think, more of their core fears, et cetera. So you give tools on how to listen, as it were. And then there's some of the other control patterns is giving gifts or favors in order to win approval or acceptance. I've done that. Make sacrifices for others, secretly hoping they'll do the same for you. I'm guilty. And I'm reading through this list thinking, oh, my gosh, I have done so much of this. Or here's a good one. Staying silent or saying I'm fine or nothing's wrong when you're displeased and you're secretly stewing about something. And this is like we were saying earlier. It's like people are afraid to talk about this. How do you bring this up? How do you bring these things up where you feel safe? And it's so powerful.
Is that a question?
Oh, no, I'm just thinking out loud here.
You're just thinking out loud. I didn't think so. Yeah. Yeah.
But, it's important to be able to do that. So let's talk about that a little bit. Some ideas on how to, if someone is triggered and we've done the pause routine, let's talk about that. How do we work on getting calm? I mean, what are some of the steps that you guys suggest on
Well, first of all, we will need to remind listeners that it's important to have a pause agreement between
the two
people. They have to agree beforehand that they're going to make an attempt to get their higher brain function back online when their nervous system's going crazy with all these bodily reactions and stories or shut down. I mean, sometimes the nervous system going crazy means you don't feel anything. So, you know, they need to know that this is a valuable thing to do. This is the hardest thing to do, really, is the pause part. So we want to make sure we emphasize that they need to be do this pre-work. There's a number of these worksheets, like the one that you just talked about, sharing what we notice in ourselves that tends to set our partner off, things that we do. So we do a lot of self-awareness work then and teach people how to notice the early warning signals so they can have this pause agreement. And then once they agree, it's like a word like pause or timeout, then you kind of go to your separate corners in a sense, or you can sit next to each other, but you don't talk. You go inward and you do, there's some breathing techniques that we give people. A lot of these practices for calming your nervous system are like yoga type things, breathing exercises, body awareness type of exercises, so that people master, it's a stress reduction program in the chapters on calming. You can use these, you know, at work with your employees or your boss, or your kids.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with that because, you know, I was reading through when I was reading through your book too. I totally agree. This could be used across the board, in whatever relationship you're in. You know, something I wanted to point out too about, you know, being aware of your list of your triggers and being aware of list of your partner's triggers, et cetera. This isn't about walking on eggshells, but it's really just about being aware of how you can, because you have to heal yourself, but also learning how to work with your partner so they can heal as well and allowing them to. And it's not about re-damaging. It's about, you know, growing from that. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Okay. If you reveal these tender feelings, like your fears, your partner's more apt to have empathy for you. And the big key, and this is what goes on during the calming period too, is you have more empathy for yourself because you sit quietly, you feel your feelings, and you go deeper into, wow, this feeling that I have where I'm going, they can't treat me that way, no, or she can't treat me that way. Wow, that's the same way I felt in my family when I would always be outnumbered. I was one of five siblings, and I would always be outnumbered. And it seems like I never got my voice heard, and I was such an angry little kid. And underneath that, there was like this feeling of nobody cares about me. And so you begin to reflect on your own childhood. It just naturally comes up when you're agitated and you calm yourself down. This is the kind of thing that happens in meditation for a lot of people when they begin meditating, or when they, maybe the middle period of a meditation practice, emotions start coming up from your childhood that you didn't even know were down there. Well, this is like a mini meditation period, this calming practice that we teach people. And they naturally become more aware of all the stuff that's buried in their subconscious, but they do it in a self-compassionate way.
Right.
So you develop more compassion for yourself, and you're less afraid of emotional pain. You're less afraid of the normal, what I call the normal pains of a relationship.
Right.
I don't mean abuse now, because I am in, you know about spousal abuse, but I mean the normal pains, like getting your feelings hurt because your partner didn't come home late. I mean, didn't come home on time.
And, you know, and I have to say, looking back, you know, my second marriage lasted almost 16 years, and it was such a learning experience for me because I had to learn about myself, and a lot of my past did come up and surface. It was like the Valdez oil spill. I mean, it's still, you know, stuff still bubbles up, and I'm in a place now where I'm aware of these things, and I've learned how to separate it from what the situation is to what is coming up for me. What are those feelings? And you know, I've been learning to do my own self-calming. Like, I'm paying mm-hmm. attention to it and allowing to feel those feelings and recognizing it and not using it to place blame, because it's not the other person's fault that I'm feeling this. It's just stuff that I have to deal with.
Right.
And something that they were doing triggered my issues that I need to figure out to resolve and heal. And this is where, and you recommend this too, for couples to go through this, because couples can work together on this. If they know that they've got these triggers, if they know that they've got these things, it's so valuable to have these tools. Like, for example, you have in here a section on what's ringing your alarm. And it's about reactive, how often we react to stuff before we really think things through. And it's so, let's see here. So some of the things, like reactive stories, for example, like I'm alone, I'm shut out, he doesn't care, my feelings don't matter, I come last. Like you and I were already discussing this a little bit. And then so those are the stories, and then the feelings are irritated, frustrated, annoyed, angry, resentful, infuriated, enraged, and anxious. And then the behaviors are pursue, prod, provoke, pressure, question, complain, criticize, yell, and blow up. And I was reading this, and you used the example of Donna and Eric, and they were, I think it was at a restaurant, and he had a cell phone out. He was just trying to make something work. And she totally, like, reacted. Yeah. And so in her head, she had this story going off that she didn't matter. And in his head, he feels like, oh, she never appreciates what I do for her.
Yeah.
And I was reading these things, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I never thought about it in that way. So I was really grateful for these examples about how they both reacted. Like, with his reaction, when he was triggered, is like, I never get it right. It all seems hopeless. I'm a failure as a mate. I must be flawed. Because she'll like, attack him with a sword, and he's got the shield up. And they kept going in this cycle. Go ahead.
Oh, so part of the prep work, when you mentioned cycle, part of the prep work in knowing how to address these triggers is realizing that there's a cycle going on where you're both triggering each other's deeper fears. Like, the more she criticizes, the more he withdraws, but the more he withdraws, the more she's going to criticize. It's like either party, you could say either party causes the other, but it's really people inadvertently scare one another. It's not a matter of blame or cause, because the fact is we're co-triggering each other. So we help the couple, if it is a couple working with the book, you know, singles can use the book to understand relationships in general or to understand a past relationship.
Yeah.
But if a couple is looking at this together, like in my consulting office, well, I also do work on Skype with couples, but if they're working together, they can go, oh, yeah, every time we seem to get stuck where I'm defending myself or trying to, you know, get out of here, like I'm the avoidant type, and I'm trying to get you to talk, I'm the pursuer type, you know, we got the pursuer type and the avoidant type, you know, we're in that cycle again, and we have to call for a pause, a timeout, a stop. And that's when we do our inner work, like we were saying, looking into our core fears and what happened when we were a child.
Right. And, you know, and I love that you brought up that even singles, because I'm, you know, I'm currently single, and I am enjoying this information because it's helping me, because I don't want to, as I told a friend the other day, I don't want to mess it up for the next one. I want to understand this stuff, because I've been, you know, I can honestly say I don't think I've ever really had a healthy, quote-unquote, relationship because of so much dysfunction in my life. So I've been working on myself so I can bring to the table a healthier relationship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stirring up the past. I mean, the past is going to come up, and I need to know that I can be safe to talk about it if I need to, but I'm not comparing that person to the past. And that's what my second ex-husband would bring up all the time, that I would, you know, he would compare himself to my first ex, and I would not bring it up. I don't know what the reasoning behind that was, but It's just baffling to me, because I'm like, I couldn't figure out, why are you bringing this up? Because I never even brought that up. I never would talk about it. But
it was his own insecurities somehow, huh?
Yes.
And if you had these tools, it would have helped him talk about his own insecurities instead of doing the comparing thing, because that's more what we were calling a control pattern. That's just an automatic thing. But if you look underneath that comparing behavior, there's a fear. There's a tender, vulnerable feeling, a need and a fear. And we help couples get to what they really need to be talking about beyond swords and shields and eggshells.
Yeah, and not to talk, not what they need to talk about, but how to talk about it, because I think that's the hardest part.
Yes.
What are safe ways to speak about these things without feeling like you're going to trigger someone worse or dig in the hole deeper? And that's part of your tools, is to do that. You have
to be carefully scripted if you're not going to re-trigger each other. You know,
right.
You really do have to follow the script. And as a counselor, I have to really be active and lean on my couples so they create a safe place for each other to be vulnerable and keep it safe. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have these fill in the blank scripts, as you saw. So that keeps people from being too, what some people might consider natural. You know, your natural automatic ways are typically not working because they're not very self-aware.
They're
just automatic. They're your automatic habits that you've always used that have always given you mixed results. You know,
right.
Why not get great results every time?
Right. Well, you know, just like any kind of learning a new skill, that's what this is. You know, learning how to speak and talk to your partner in a healthy way is a skill. You know, I have to say, on my job, I had to do some online, there's like some Harvard training courses for business type stuff at my work. And several of the courses had to do with using language. Like, instead of saying I'm worried or I'm afraid, I would say I'm concerned about such and such. So there was like, there's a lot of verbiage that I've had to learn in order to work with my coworkers in regards to the situation or whatnot that might be a sensitive subject, so as not to have a misunderstanding, but using clear language. And I've spilled that into my personal life, using language with my own children, trying to teach them healthier language and hopefully modeling, you know, healthier behavior as far as how to communicate.
Yeah, it's great with parents and children, actually. I've been working with some parents on looking at the vicious cycles you get in with your kids. Just the same thing. Kids scare parents by sometimes the way they act, and the parents scare the kids, and you have your own reactive cycle with kids. So I definitely want to promote this book for parents and children as well, even though it says, you know, strengthen your love, and sounding like a romantic love. It's strengthen any kind of relationship with anyone you love.
Well, you know, and also for teenagers, you know, my oldest son is 14. And, you know, with my divorce and with the split and all that stuff, he's got a lot of feelings that he's not been willing to talk about. And you actually just little light bulb over my head, because I think I'm going to go through some of these things with him just to kind of see if I can get him to share some of his stuff, or at least get him so he could talk about it. Because, you know, there's no, you know, I think it's so important, because I want him to feel safe. You know, I've never berated him, and I've been careful about my language about their dad, and because I want them to have a healthy relationship with him, etc. But it's really difficult, you know, when you're in the midst of something that's really painful and you're dealing with these emotions and it affects your children, and oh my goodness, it's a stew pot of unhappiness.
yeah. There's a lot of buried feelings, you know, in a divorce situation and afterwards, often because the kids feel like they need to protect the parents. Sometimes they resent the parents for being selfish or something like that, you know, but sometimes they feel protective, you know, like, and they don't want to, like, your 14-year-old boy, of course, the 14-year-old boy, too, is at a stage where it's hard to know how to deal with soft, vulnerable feelings, you know. they're getting double messages, you know. My girlfriend and my mom want to hear how I feel, but my buddies think I, you know, not strong if I show weakness. You know, it's a tough thing being a boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I've thought about that. I mean, he starts high school next year, and I think about, oh, my gosh, what is he going to be? He's already, you know, he's in middle school now, and just, you know, growing into a man and you know, dealing with life, and it's like, it's you know, my goal is to make sure he has good tools, if anything, you know, just the basics on better communication, et cetera, because it's going to grow with him as he grows up. But some of the things, I love this, it's in the repair part, and I'm probably, I don't want to skip too far ahead because I want to spend some time on this one here, but on scripting, on getting to the core. So in order to get to the core, you have to understand what, and we've already reviewed that a little bit earlier, about a lot of the core fears that we have, the core feelings, and so it's really important to have those things down. And you have some beautiful scripting here. It's like, I'd like to repair something with you. Is it a good time? And then they can say, they can either reply back, no, it is not. I'm not feeling ready for that. And it's important to respect that and step back and say, okay, you know, can we set up a time or give them a little bit more space, whatever the blow up was, whatever you're trying to repair. And then I really like, I'm just going to read through this. It says, I got triggered when I heard you say, or saw you, let's say, talk, play on your cell phone through the entire dinner or something like that.
Yeah.
And then a story came up in my mind that I felt unloved, or I wasn't
that I don't matter. That would be the story. I don't matter, or I'm not important, or this relationship's not important to you. So that would be the react, we call them reactive stories, because they're part of being triggered. And so we use the word reactive.
Right, right. And then the part says, I reacted by, and this is what I thought was extremely key, is this: whoever's saying the scripting, let's say it's the that couple that I was referring to earlier, she's admitting that this is an issue that she, this is not a term issue, but this is something that she's needing to deal with, but she's admitting that this is what's triggering her. So she, I reacted by criticizing or whatever it was that she did. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, so right there, the partner feels a little safer because he can realize she's not blaming him for it. She's owning her own reaction. That language is important.
Right. It's very important. And then she goes on, but deep down inside, I felt, and this is where she expresses her core feeling, abandoned or whatever it is that triggered. And then fear came up to me that
it was a hurt. She'd feel, I felt hurt and a fear. It's like it's a hurt and a fear in this case, I think.
You can have
two core fears. Two core feelings. You can have both hurt and fear. And then and then the fear is the fear of abandonment, the fear of not being important. So back to you, because you're reading right from the script here. We're just explaining what goes into each of these blanks here.
Right, right. And then the next one is what I need more than anything was to feel loved or to feel accepted or to feel appreciated or whatever the blank is.
Yeah,
and then
it's like whatever the story was, if the story is, I don't matter, I'm all alone here, the need then, you can kind of read what the core need is from hearing the fear story. So what I need is reassurance that I do matter, that I'm not all alone in this marriage, you know, that we're here together. So that's, you know, it's kind of, it teaches you how to read your partner's code even when they're in a reaction. Because you hear my partner say, you know, nothing I ever do is good enough, you know that their core fear is, I'm not good enough for you. Now, not a lot of men are able to just come out and say that. I was doing a session yesterday with a couple. I had to work with him a little bit to get him to really say it. But once he said it, it's like a whole floodgate of feelings came out, like, I'm afraid I'm not organized enough. I'm afraid I'm, you know, going to let you down. I mean, it was just so vulnerable. And the wife just had tears in her eyes, and she'd been stone cold a minute ago. And as soon as he started, like, having some soft feelings in the confession of his fears, they were, like, really close for the rest of the session.
Wow.
I bet I get to do that every day.
Oh, that's amazing. You know,
I hope people get soft with each other.
It's so important for, I don't know, this Well, I'll finish the script, and hopefully I'll remember what my thought was there, because I don't want to lose where we're at. So the next part is, I'm sorry I reacted that way and would like to take it back, which I thought, wow. It's like, you know, and sometimes, you know, you hear that phrase in life, there's no take backs. Well, this is their way to amend, like, if I could take it back, it's,
you,
and then she goes on.
You definitely can take back. People need to get over that. You know, you can't change the past. You have to go back and tell, if I had it to do over. That's the most important part.
Yeah. Right, right. So it's it, and she goes, and if I could do it over again, I would have told you that I was feeling, and this is where you guys teach that, you know, you're not walking in eggshells. You're able to actually be vulnerable enough to say what it is you really feel. And this is so key to the healing of the whole process. So what she was feeling was, this was a core feeling or a core fear. And then what she says, and I would have asked for reassurance that you still love me, or whatever it is that she was needing.
Yeah, that I do this, matter.
Yeah. And it's what I wanted to mention earlier before I finished the scripting here was how valuable it is to feel safe, that it's okay to have vulnerable feelings. Because I think, you know, because I don't know if it's the society we live in. I'm not sure. You know, it's like we were just alluding to earlier about how men and boys, men have to be the strong, you know, I don't have feelings, you know, anything can bounce off of me, and you know, I'm the gruff, stern person. And I think that's like a society's projection. And it's like men have feelings too, like you just shared about a couple where when he opened up, she softened and realized he has feelings. This is what's going on. And it's so valuable for men to know that they can feel safe enough to do that. And
you were saying, why do we, you know, how come we can't be vulnerable? You know, one thing that comes to my mind, Shannon, is people get teased a lot in childhood by even by parents, well-meaning parents. I remember my parents were great, but I can remember them teasing my brothers, you know, oh, you got a girlfriend, you know, the kid's like 10 years old, oh, you got a girlfriend. And all of a sudden, I have three brothers, the boys are starting to clam up around my dad because, you know, he makes fun of them. And I watched that. Yeah. I was a little older. I watched that, and it just hurt me because, I don't know, somehow my dad didn't do that with me, or it rolled off my back or something. Yeah. But I could see him doing it to my brothers, and maybe it has to do with the whole male thing, you know, my dad being threatened by the boys being a little bit softer, something. You know, that I'd have to, you know, that would have to be a wild guess because I can't know what's in my father's mind.
Yeah, well, no, and I have to agree with that because I grew up with that with my own father. I've got four brothers and three sisters, and my father was very stern with my brothers from what I remember. And it was like he would use phrase, you know, you're a sissy and things like that if you cry or show any emotion. And then I've had one of the biggest issues, like with my second ex-husband, you know, because we've got two boys together, he would say comments like that to my own sons, and they're little. I mean, like, they're little boys.
Kids,
it's okay for them to cry.
Kids are a lot more fragile, their emotional body especially. You know, they can get hurt and get their head bumped, and they bounce right back.
Oh, yeah.
I was amazed at how easily they could bounce back from physical injury, but emotional injuries seem to stick around, and parents don't realize how fragile we are, even up and through our teens.
Yeah, there is
our emotions. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading an article. I don't remember where it was online somewhere, and it was about phrases that parents should never say, and it was some of those phrases like "you're a sissy" or "don't be so weak" or "stop being a crybaby" or you know, things like that. That it's
absolutely
really hurtful because
that's important. Yeah,
because that child is like, that's the only way they know how to express their fear. And what it is this is where the parent needs to stop and pause and learn to listen. Like, what's really going on? There's something, there's a fear or there's an upset or something going on within that child that's causing this.
Well, maybe
this,
the parent hasn't processed their own hurt feelings from childhood.
Yes. Oh,
so if you're a parent, get this book, if you want to be a better parent, even if you know, even if you're a single parent, get this book and get to know your own inner vulnerable feelings, and then you can be the kind of parent that the child wants to come to when they're hurt and get comforted when they're hurt. And that makes for a better adult who can have good relationships when they're an adult versus kid who feels like there's nobody he can go to when he's hurt because somebody's going to call him weak, or if he cries, you know, he's a little tiny kid. I see this happening a lot. Parents just stuff a toy, a little stuffed toy or some kind of a truck. Here, play with this, kid. And the kid is like crying and wanting to be picked up and held, and the parents just pacify them. And we need to be, you know, being a parent is really hard, and there's no way to be a perfect parent. We got to start with that premise. But it can be an exciting personal growth adventure if you'll get this book and have this by your side as you go through the parenting challenges, because it's any relationship challenge.
You know what? I absolutely agree, and I really, you know, I totally agree with that 100%. You know, people say, well, there's no instructions for your children. I'm like, well, yeah, there is. Now there is. There's a five-minute relationship prepare.
Yeah.
You know, as far as learning
handbook,
to work with
like a cookbook for how to do
it. Yep, exactly. There was something I wanted to discuss for a little bit here. It was about it was quickly repairing a relationship rupture. So let's say, you know, you're going through the thing. One thing I wanted to express is how, and I think I alluded to this earlier, how people often just want to listen just long enough so they can formulate their reply, so they can push their side of the story. And it's so important to learn how to, you know, you got to button your lip and just and listen. And this is, I found this paragraph, it was on page 155, and it says, sometimes our attempt to be empathetic is undermined by an urgent desire to have our partner hear and understand our own feelings and needs. That will come later when you read your repair statement. Right now in the repair sequence, it's your turn to provide reassurances of safety to your partner. Be willing to be the first one to offer empathy, reassurance, and co-regulation. And I love how you guys break this down in more detail so people understand what on earth this means.
We've even got a script for being a good listener, you know. Like it gives you something to do while you're listening, you know. You've got this script. So listening is kind of a difficult skill. It's often harder than talking.
Right. It is. It absolutely is. Let's see. There was another one I wanted to bring up. This I found really
I love how you're noticing how you're quoting the different page numbers. I love that.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
happy.
Told you, well,
I'm very happy listening to you. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm
this?
So happy. Well,
just,
you know, when I
shows me you're paying careful attention to this book.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed the book, and, you know, and I needed, you know, we had to reschedule the show because I needed extra time to read it because there's so much good information in here. So there's one a section here on page 158, and I'd love to entertain this one for a little bit because I thought it was fascinating. It says, couple therapist Dan Tatkin suggests
Tatkin. Mm-hmm.
Tatkin, okay, suggests that eye contact is crucial to the success of reassurance. He recommends that you look into your partner's left eye as you deliver your key message, as this may reach more directly to the right brain. Make sure you speak slowly, watch for breathing and facial expressions as signs of how well your reassurance is being received by your partner's brain. Experiment until you find just the right ways to combine eye contact and supportive touch with your verbal reassurances. I thought that is so fascinating, and I know that probably that goes into, I think, the neuro programming and the whole right brain, left brain. I'm hoping I'm not too far off with that, but is that kind of
when we do we teach sort of a, you know, quick version, you know, cliff notes on brain science so that people can kind of get a feeling for what's going on under the surface and watch for the cues of whether your partner's nervous system seems to be relaxing or whether they seem to be tense.
You become
a much more aware person by using these tools, and of course that's going to help you in every aspect of your life. You kind of know what's going on, you know. Isn't it kind of good to go through life knowing what's going on rather than oblivious?
It's sure
makes
helpful
sense to me, you know. It's the way I'm trying to live. That's why I write these books, you know. I teach what I need to learn.
Yeah, well, you know, isn't that how it is? You know,
yeah.
It's like...
No, you're talking about yourself, too, sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is all... And the thing is as we're learning, hopefully others are picking it up and learning it, too. I mean, that's the whole idea of, like, sharing, because, you know, somewhere out there someone's going to hear this and say, hey, you know what, that really clicked with me, and that's so helpful, and I'm grateful for it. And so, but you also, so one of the chapters too, there's like, this one I really enjoyed was the power of vulnerability, relating instead of controlling.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. So often, you know, people want to use, I don't know, the communication that's all about control, about, you know, you're not listening to me anymore. Why don't you ever listen to me? And this is this chapter kind of delves into that, about the whole learning how to work through that. You know,
We help people notice the distinction between when you're communicating to relate, which is just being self-revealing, versus when you're communicating to control, which is to get the other person to respond to you in some way that's comfortable for you.
Right.
So, control is very subtle. I actually maintain, I've written another book about relating versus controlling called Getting Real. And in that book, I did some research, came up with a statistic that about 92% of all human communication has the secret intent to control. It doesn't mean bossy control. It can actually mean smiling and nodding in order to get the other person to think you're listening, or in order to appease the other person so they'll go away and stop bothering you. All the subtle ways that we control other people. And you know, and you referenced the list of control patterns in our current book, and people love that stuff, because I mean, people who are into personal growth love that stuff, because it's like gives them a quick, easy way to become a lot more self-aware. And it has no self-deprecation, no guilt or blame involved. It's just like, hey, we all do this. Let's laugh about it, and let's become more aware of ourselves.
Yeah,
so we're easier to be around. You know, people who are in control patterns and doing their automatic thing are not that easy to be around.
No, that's my ex-husband.
The other book is called Getting Real, and that makes a big deal out of this distinction between communicating to relate versus communicating to control.
Yeah. So you also in chapter 13 you got into some real stuff about real intimacy in the bedroom, and this I thought was really good too, because everyone has their own cycles. And everyone has their own, you know, rhythms in their bodies, and they're tired or all of these things. And so how to use these tools in the intimate part of a relationship, and how vital it is to, it's again, it goes back to the communication. It's about, you know, learning how to talk about, first of all, what it is that is bothering them in a way where they feel safe, because, you know, how more vulnerable can you get than, you know, in an intimate relationship where you feel the
sex
rejection?
Is the most vulnerable way to be with another person. Sometimes we try to cover that up, but it really is a place where our vulnerability is going to get exposed if we are with the same partner for a little while at least.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a difference in rhythms or appetites, you know, I want it and he doesn't. You know, if any difference, we tend to take those differences personally, and we get our buttons pushed anyway, you know, even if it's about money or the kids. But if it's about sex, we take it even more personally, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, like the old joke, not tonight, dear, I have a headache. Well, what's really going on? And if he or she could be reversed, and you know, if they're not in the mood, well, then are they just not feeling well, or is there something going on where maybe they're just not feeling that wanting to be intimate? I mean, it's not about you so much, it's about what's going on inside of them. And I think that's the biggest thing, is understanding this whole thing is it's about what are they dealing with, and this is where these tools are so powerful, because then you could pay attention to, like, okay, let's pause and let's discuss, and you have the scripting on how to express, well, this is what I'm feeling, these are my vulnerable triggers that are causing, and it's so simple, and you, like you said, you've got all the tools. Actually, they're also in the back of the book, but these tools that can be used in pretty much every single relationship issue that's going on in your world, and how to resolve it. And it's about the repair, and it's about, you know, finding those places where you can heal, you know, do that healing work.
Yeah, I probably ought to print out a bunch of those. See, we offer the handouts free on the 5MinuteRelationshipRepair.com website. Probably ought to print out a whole bunch of those repair statements and put one next to your bed, put one in the kitchen, you know, put one in the car, one in the kids' room.
Because
you're going to need it. It's like a reminder. Whoops, let me go back and try that again. If I had it to do over, I would have told you, you know, and just follow the script, and it'll get you out of trouble a lot of times.
Yeah, and you know, it's simple, but it's very deep, and it's very profound, and it just boils, we'll loop right on all around back about, you got to be real with this. You know, one of my,
words that just get to the heart of the matter are much more important than long explanations. And we explain in the book why that's true, because of the way the brain works, we can't take in. You know, even during a repair when we're already calm, we can't take in more than a couple sentences at once. So we help people put a period on the end of that sentence. That was great the way it was. If you keep talking, you're going to dig the hole deeper.
Yeah, because, you know, continuing on isn't going to, it's not going to, stressing your point further doesn't necessarily, I think people shut down. I know I personally did when my ex would go on one of his rambling rages, but he'd go on rambling, and I'm like, I'm sitting there trying to decipher what is the core of what you're, you know, because I'm sitting, I didn't even have your book, and I was trying to figure this out. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Can you get to the point, please? I'm getting old here. But
we teach people to focus, though, on your own feelings. Like, you might have to say, you know, hearing you say that, I'm starting to feel tense in my body, and if you presence that you're starting to feel tense, then you might need a pause. You know, even when your partner may be telling you about some problem at work, but all of a sudden they start getting agitated, they start using a lot of negative emotion words, and you start to get impatient. You know, when am I going to get a chance to offer some empathy or support here? And, you know, you're trying to be a good partner, and all of a sudden you're getting triggered because your partner's talking too much. So we give people tools for just, we call it staying on your own side of the net. Like, if you simply report, wow, you know, I'm starting to feel scared here that I won't be able to respond to you because I had something to say and now it went away.
I mean, just learning
how to speak about yourself, and while, like you said, while being tuned into your partner, knowing your partner has some needs too. Like, you're not the only one with needs, and that's always important. You know, two people have needs here. And so we teach people how to make room for both people's needs by giving them the script that kind of trains them to do this. It's not that easy holding differences, to feel the other partner's needs and feel your own needs at one and the same time and value them both together. That is like the key skill in our planet today, is dealing with differences and resolving big conflicts. So I think it starts at home with couples and parents and children.
I absolutely agree. You know, one of the things I wrote when I wrote my book was, all healing and empowerment begins from within. If we want to have peace in our world, it starts with the self.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying too. That's beautiful.
Yep. It's so valuable. You know, when you were expressing what you were saying there, something that I had thought of, and, you know, we're going to wrap up the show in a few minutes, but one of the things that maybe you can give some suggestions on, how how to present this information to your partner. Let's say one person is all fired up and they think, this is great, this would really help our relationship. How do I bring this up to my partner?
How do you do it without being controlling or perceived
exactly.
as controlling? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, first I would say that you let the person know that you have read something that you think will make a big difference in having a happier relationship. You know,
yeah.
So you start with I call it a pro-relationship preamble. You start with, well, what's the common goal here? Because sometimes people have different styles of getting to that common goal, but the common goal is happiness together, a loving feeling, a happy
right.
family. So something that will help us have a happier communication. And so then, no, and then you might read a passage from the book, say, here, you know, here's something I just read. But try not to make it a passage that is about your partner's weaknesses. Make it a passage that's about your own insight into one of your weaknesses, particularly maybe one of your control patterns. That will do your partner so much good. They'll go, oh, my God, she's aware of that thing that she always does that bugs me. Maybe I better read this book. So start with
that
a pro-relationship, humble preamble.
I love that, because that goes right back to what we were discussing earlier about owning your stuff, owning your own issues or faults or whatever it is, because everybody's got them. You know, nobody is perfect, quote-unquote, whatever that is. And I think that alone will help the relationship become stronger, because I think if you're willing to accept that, yeah, I do this, and I'm willing to work on it, not just say it to appease the other person, but you got to be willing to work on that situation or whatever it is that you've got a thing with. And like you were saying too, it's not about controlling, it's about a dance. It's a symbiotic relationship. Like, we're in this together. How can we work on this so we can, you know, have a stronger relationship or a better relationship, you know, whether it be your partner, your children, your coworker, because these skills can be used on the at the workplace too. You know,
this is fun work. I know that you have to be a little bit oriented toward personal growth to enjoy this kind of work. But I tell you, even people who've never picked up a self-help book can find this particular thing fun, this book, because it's so scripted. It's for the very logical mind. You know, you don't have to be touchy-feely. It's like, here's what you have to do to get the job done of having a happy relationship.
You can be a very
pragmatic, non airy-fairy person and love this kind of work. And it really is fun. I mean, I'm doing it with my partner, and we're having a blast.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, I love it
even
when I hear authors.
Our weaknesses, you know, it's like we get closer we get to laugh at ourselves, and, you know, it works.
You know, I have to say, when I express like a really deep feeling or what I'm feeling, because I'm feeling heavy, you feel lighter afterwards. You feel like,
Absolutely. Okay,
I got that off of my chest. I can just, like, I can breathe now that I know that this is now, I feel safe giving this information, that I know they're not going to hurt me with it. You know, it's not, that's another thing you cover in the book too, which we are running out of time. It's about, you can't use this information against the person. It's about working together to heal the relationship, not damage it worse. It's
and
not
once
about
you've done the pre-work and gotten, you know, a certain amount of self-awareness and self-compassion, you'll be gentler and tender towards yourself, so you won't do the thing that your partner might be afraid of, which is using my weaknesses against me. You know, that is
right.
a fear, because people do in fights say mean things that come from all their vulnerable disclosures in the past. But once you really start to, you know, and there might be a few slip-ups when you first start to use these tools too. You know, there's no perfect universe here. But we can get better and better at it. And if we know how to repair, we can get back to feeling good, even if we've made a big mess and even fear we've done some damage.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And so, yeah, we're going to have to wrap up the show, but thank you so much, Susan. I so appreciated you being on my show, discussing your work. I absolutely loved your book. I'm going to be referring to it a lot in my personal life.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. So your website is www.5minuterelationshiprepair.com. You can also visit
Susan. That's 5-5-B-E.
Correct. Excellent. And then and you can also visit Susan's website at susancampbell.com. These links are going to be on my website, so at projectempowerment.info. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us today. Send me an email or a message at kathleenmilliken.com if you've got any questions. I'd love to hear from you.